Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
You see, one of the things that I believe the legislature has gotten very wrong is they believe that only parents who have taken their children out of traditional public schools in some way have made a choice. That's not true. We have hundreds of thousands of parents who are choosing to be in traditional public schools. I am one of them. And I believe that the legislature needs to honor their choice as well.
The fact of the matter is, I'm for more choice. David's for less choice. And I want to see more choice for our parents. I want parents to be able to send their children to the school that they would like to send them to. I want to see all of our kids in Arizona. We have 1.1 million public school children have access to an excellent education.
But I don't believe that Dr. Ford is part of some vast conspiracy from start to finish to smear Judge Kavanaugh, as has been alleged by some on the right. And I do know that I do not believe that Judge Kavanaugh is some kind of serial sexual predator, as some have alleged on the left.
I think it's a classical education. I think it's an education that will prepare our kids for wherever they want to go in the future, whether it's college or whether it's a career. They still need to have a level of education to be successful in this country.
And with us to talk about this week's two Arizona gubernatorial debates, the Brett Kavanaugh hearing and more, are John Gabriel, editor-in-chief at Ricochet.com, and David Lujan, director of the Arizona Center for Economic Progress. Guys, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
David, let me start with you. Let me get your reaction to the two gubernatorial debates this week in Arizona. Obviously, a lot of focus on K-12 education. Is there a key takeaway for you that came out of how the two sort of handled themselves, not to leave out the Green Party candidate, but to focus on Garcia and Ducey?
Yeah, well, I think conservative columnist Bob Robb had a column in the Arizona Republic that came out this morning that basically said that he doesn't think that Governor Ducey has a plan for his second term. And I think that's what I saw, is that not really talking about, what he wants to do in his second term. You know, he's relying a lot on the fact that Arizona's economy is doing well. But the fact is, the whole country's economy is doing well. And if you look at the things that he has control of, and I'll give you one example, the state of Arizona is the state's largest employer. He's the boss of this, the largest employer, employing over 52,000 state workers. And state employees have not received a raise in almost a decade. So when you're talking about increasing wages for Arizonans, one thing he has control of, and he hasn't done a thing.
John, I want to come back to what David said about plan, because that's another word that came up a lot in the two debates, which is that Bob Robb said Doug Ducey doesn't seem to have a plan for a second term. A lot of people said David Garcia should be an education expert. Where's his specific education plan?
Right, and that's something that was concerning. I didn't see a plan from Garcia or Ducey, really, mapping out what was going on. I missed the Green Party candidate in the second debate because he was in a respite from the interruptions and things like that. He was it's like, wow, I want to hear more from this gentleman. But it was it got pretty ugly, a lot of charges back and forth, a lot of kind of bumper sticker slogans. But I think for a lot of Arizona voters, this was introducing them to David Garcia, and he kind of had to say, okay, here's where I see the next 4 years going.
Given the nature of debates now, is it surprising that really neither of them had many specifics in terms of what they want to do on education or anything else?
Not really. That's a trend we've been seeing in debate. You know, we would all love the policy-heavy Oxford-style debate, but it's going to be kind of bumper stickers thrown back and forth is what it usually goes down to. Who looks better on camera? Who looks good when the sound is turned off? Those kind of old tropes of political image.
But I do think the people of Arizona want to see a plan. They want to see, particularly when you're talking about teachers and those state workers I was talking about, they want to see what's the plan for them and what's going to help create better economic opportunities. And I think the one thing with David Garcia, though, I mean, he recognizes is that we need to raise revenue to invest in priorities. And that is a significant thing where Governor Ducey continues to say we don't need to raise additional revenue. And I think we just can't invest in priorities unless we do.
Well, David, how influential does that governor, if it's Governor Ducey or Governor Garcia, have to be as far as the legislature is concerned? We may see some changes. We may still see Republican control. We're not sure, obviously, at this point. But how much does that person really have to set a tone? When Governor Ducey started his first term, he tried to talk about being the education governor. Some people will say he succeeded. Others will say he has not. But going forward, how much is it to tell the legislature, this is my plan, we have to work together on this? Because that's where the money's going to come from.
Yeah, I think it's important. I think particularly it's going to be important over the next 2 years, because you're going to have a legislature that's going to be closer in political divide. You're not going to, I think the Democrats are going to pick up some seats and might even get control of a chamber. And so that means whoever's the governor is going to have to work with the legislature. So I think it's important to be articulating now what's the plan for the next 2 years. You know, one of the frustrations I always had as a lawmaker is that no lawmakers, either the governor or the legislature, seems to think beyond their next election. And nobody seems to think about what's the long-term plan for Arizona. And we just don't see it.
John, you talked about how these debates were sort of a way for the two candidates to introduce themselves to voters. Given that early voting starts not that long from now, is that advantage to the governor if that's sort of where they are right now, introducing themselves, because people in theory have known him or known of him for maybe a little bit longer?
Exactly. And a challenger always has a tougher time because the challenger is basically trying to fire the old person. So I think how Garcia has handled it is just mostly through criticizing Ducey. If he could offer a vision, you know, a clearly mapped vision. Again, this needs to be an elevator pitch because people's attention spans are short, mine included. But a vision for the state over the next 4 years that would be different and an improvement over Ducey. He really has to make that case fast.
Yeah, you know, I've seen a lot of polls over the last year and a half where Governor Ducey is underwater when it comes to favorability. But then when you look at the polling numbers, you know, with an opponent, they're closer. And what that tells me is that people are unhappy with the job that Governor Ducey's doing, but they don't know who his opponent is. So that really is going to be critical for David Garcia to tell his story and tell, you know, what he would do differently.
Well, how would you, I mean, obviously, you know, maybe he has asked you for advice, I'm not sure, but if he did, what would you tell him to do at this point?
Well, I think he just needs to, you know, it's an uphill battle because Governor Ducey obviously has a lot of money, but I did see, you know, that David's on the air now. And so I think, you know, that I think should be a real sign of optimism for David, because, you know, what those polling numbers show is that there's a lot of room to make up. People are not happy with the governor. And once he does start getting his story out and telling what his plans are, and he does have plans, David Garcia does, then he's going to pick up those poll numbers. And I think, you know, a lot of polls still show it's very close. So, and some actually have David Garcia ahead. So I think he has a good opportunity if he can get his story out there.
John, one point that stood out to me from the Tuesday debate that we carried here was Governor Ducey's introduction of that website to basically criticize David Garcia. And Garcia made what I thought was a cogent point, agree or disagree with him on the issues, which was, here's a guy who's been in office almost 4 years, and now he's still throwing out this fact check, whatever. That struck me as something you're talking about, the elevator moment and the bumper sticker. It's not to say it was a terrible thing for him to do. It just strategically, it felt like, why did he need to do that?
Right. It's really kind of from the start a bare-knuckle brawl, and that's, I think, what we're going to see in the Senate race as well. Just people trying to be tough and proactive and really characterize, really define the candidate before they can define themselves. And I think that's what he's trying to do.
Okay, here I go. I'm sorry to invoke this early in the program. Is that Trumpian?
I think that has really changed the landscape, seeing what happened in 2016. People trying to imitate that fight. You get it from a lot of Republicans, but even from a few Democrats now, are like, well, we have to be just as tough or tougher than the other person and jump in early.
David, you mentioned that David Garcia is now up on the air. We've heard in the past about how his campaign is not really rolling in money with lots of extra cash to spend. On the Republican side, there's a lot of outside money coming in from the Republican Governors Association and elsewhere. Do you see that outside money will start to come in for David Garcia at some point?
I would imagine it would. I think, you know, Arizona is going to be a purple state across, you know, not just the governor's race, but the U.S. Senate race. And so it is definitely a prime target nationally. And so I do think you're going to see some of that national money coming in. And that'll give David Garcia a boost once that happens.
What do you think, John?
Well, I think for the Democrats, not that I'm in the mood to offer them great advice, but I think focusing on a 50-state strategy is absolutely crucial for them. Arizona is a state that could tip, and I'm no longer a Republican, but looking at it from the right side of things, if Republicans think this is their state and it's a red state, no, not at all. Things right. change, populations are changing, and it's something that you have to keep re-earning from the voters, their loyalty.
Yeah.
And you have to work really hard to keep that advantage.
Gentlemen, our last couple minutes before the break, I wanted to switch topics. So, David, we found out officially this morning that Grant Woods, who's talking about running as a U.S. Senate candidate, is a Democrat, though he's been a Republican his whole professional career, has now officially endorsed Kyrsten Sinema. Does that carry a lot of weight?
It does. You know, Grant, even though he's been talking about running as a Democrat, you know, he is still, you know, a Republican, and many has a lot of support on both sides of the aisle and with the independents. And so he, I think, is a good endorsement for Kirsten because, you know, what Kirsten is somebody who works across the aisle, is works, you know, independently. And I think, you know, they both really reflect Arizona and what people are looking for, people that can work across the aisle and get things done. And nobody works harder than Kirsten.
John, as someone who's left the Republican Party yourself, what do you think of that?
I think it's a great get for Sinema, especially as how she's being portrayed in the ads from her, you know, as a hard left progressive. And, you know, you're seeing that when someone like Grant Woods, even if you think, oh, he's kind of a squish, he's not this rock rib conservative. But still, there's a lot of voters who are just kind of far more centrist, and it gives Kirsten Sinema the more centrist sheen to her.
Will voters who don't pay super close attention to politics still know who Grant Woods is, given that it's been many, many years since he served in office? And yes, he delivered a eulogy at Senator McCain's the memorial service here, but do voters still know who he is?
I think Phoenix is such a transient population. Newer voters will not know who he is, but the people who really get out and vote and are into activism, they're more long-term residents. And so they know the players, they know Grant Woods and all the history there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true. And, you know, I think one of the issues is when we talk about, you know, what are their plans? McSally is refusing to debate here in Arizona. And I think that says a lot about, you know, not wanting to be judged on her record. Kirsten is somebody who I think, you know, when if she could have the opportunity to debate, you would see a clear difference between the candidates and that, you know, Kirsten has been fighting for veterans and fighting for health care. So it's unfortunate that McSally's refusing to debate, because when we talk about issues that Arizonans care about, McSally doesn't seem to want to talk about them.
John, briefly on the debate.
Yeah, you cannot hide from voters. That's a critical mistake. You need to be out there. If you're unwilling to debate your opponent, that's a very bad look. You can't hide your way into office.
That's John Gabriel. Also here is David Lujan with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. It is the Friday Newscap here on the show on KJZZ, which continues after this. Good morning. It's the Friday Newscap here on the show on 91.5 KJZZ with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our guests this week, John Gabriel, editor-in-chief at Ricochet.com, and David Lujan, director of the Arizona Center for Economic Progress. Guys, let's talk a little bit about the Kavanaugh hearing yesterday. Obviously, very emotional, very tense. David, what did you make of the political theater around it, you know, affecting two people's lives very deeply here, and senators were making speeches. We had a prosecutor from Arizona there. It was very dramatic.
It was, you know, and I believe Dr. Blasey Ford. I thought she was very credible, and I think we're going to find that a majority of Americans believe her, and that's going to be bad news for the Republicans if they do indeed go ahead and vote him into the Supreme Court, because I think I myself have never been more motivated as I am at this moment to go out and really fight for change, and I think, but what you're seeing is the high stakes of the Supreme Court, and you know, this was all started with, you know, the Merrick Garland and you know, Democrats feel that, you know, that seat was taken from, you know, that President Obama should have been have that appointment. And so, you know, there's a lot of partisan divide on it, but it, the Supreme Court, this is a huge position which will determine a lot of, you know, policies going forward and decisions. So it's very contentious.
Well, John, we're going to keep Dr. Ford and Judge Kavanaugh out of this, because obviously they have their experience. But did either Democrats or Republicans, could they have looked any worse at times during this?
Yeah, I really think that it really hardened positions on both sides. Partisans, look at Twitter, the Algonquin roundtable of our age. And all it did really is just harden people's views. If you get a senator like Lindsey Graham, who's usually reaching across the aisle and so mild-mannered and, you know, his veins were popping out of his neck and he's yelling, it looked pretty rough. It's tough to try to explain government to your daughters, as I often try to do when the video clips you have are things like that, just people screaming at each other and delaying each other, interrupting each other. It's pretty difficult to watch the sausage being made here.
And that's one of the frustrating things, too, because we expect the president to be a partisan position. We expect Congress to be a partisan position. But we expect the Supreme Court to be sort of that entity that's going to kind of bridge the divide and just make decisions based on law. And I think what was scary by yesterday's hearing is when you saw, you know, Judge Kavanaugh come in and just really go into a really partisan tirade, you know, regardless, you know, that I think really is going to, if he gets appointed to the Supreme Court, impact people's opinions on whether he can be really truly an impartial justice going forward. And based on my opinion, I don't think he can.
Well, David, you mentioned that you are more motivated now than ever to, you know, be active and do things up into the election. But I'm wondering about people who are maybe less active on the broad scope as, you know, people like the two of you are. You know, we heard about people watching this on airplanes mm-hmm. and in bars and on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. So for people who maybe don't watch C-SPAN and don't watch and spend a lot of time around national politics, if this was maybe their introduction or reintroduction to politics, is there a danger that everybody's behavior is really going to turn people off and make them think, gosh, why do I want to get involved in this?
Sure. I mean, there's some of that danger. But I think what people were tuning into is, you know, they wanted to hear from Dr. Blasey Ford, hear her story and what happened to her. And so I think most people are going to make their determination based on you know, if they felt that she was credible, but then the Senate goes ahead and puts him on the Supreme Court, I think that's going to impact people's feelings about, you know, the politics behind this. Because I think there are going to be many senators who are going to vote to put Judge Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court who thought that she was credible. And what does that mean? That means they are putting somebody on the Supreme Court that they believe sexually assaulted a woman. And I think that is something that is going to impact a lot of people across this country and motivate them.
I think what's so difficult about this, watching both Dr. Ford and Judge Kavanaugh, is they both were very compelling to me. And it was so difficult. You could see the pain in Dr. in her face, in her voice. She's not this deep state political operative leading a conspiracy. She obviously experienced some serious trauma. And then you see Judge Kavanaugh talking about threats to his family and things. So it's just such a difficult case because none of us really know what happened in that room. We don't know if something happened or not. And it's so difficult. In a country with due process, you're saying, okay, well, he's innocent until proven guilty. It's just a very messy, ugly situation. And unfortunately, I think kind of the extreme partisans of both sides are really ramping up their rhetoric, which is terrible for both sides.
I want to ask about Senator Flake's role in this. He, of course, sits on the Judiciary Committee, was seen as maybe a possible no vote on the Republican side. He'd expressed doubts once the allegations came out. He said this morning in a statement that he will be voting to confirm Judge Kavanaugh. John, I'm curious what you make of sort of the thought process that Senator Flake appears to have gone through and then the conclusion he ultimately reached.
It's so difficult to know. I jokingly refer to him sometimes as Senator Hamlet because, you know, everybody will be waiting and trying to figure out, okay, what is he going to do? Who is he talking to? There's these breathless reports this morning even from D.C. Mm-hmm. about he talked to this senator. He didn't talk to that one. So it's very tough to figure out his internal process. A lot of people thought, too, with just the enmity between he and Trump, it might be a farewell present for Trump as he leaves the Senate. So it's very tough to figure out what exactly happened behind the scenes. I know that the prosecutor kind of laid out a case, and the only person she was laying out a case for were people like Flake and Collins and Murkowski, those few Republican senators who weren't quite sure.
Well, yep, Senator Flake talks a good game, but oftentimes his actions don't match that talk. And, you know, if he was really, truly conflicted over this, all he could have asked for an FBI investigation, I think, you know, especially being a member of the Judiciary Committee. And you know, there's all that back and forth yesterday about whether an FBI investigation would have done anything. But, you know, when you talk about, was it Mark Judge, who is the other person in that room, that, you know, they could have, talked to him and interviewed him. And so Senator Flake had an opportunity as a member of the Judiciary Committee to at least call for an FBI investigation. And he didn't do that. So I tend to think he was already leaning yes the whole way. So I'm not quite sure he was as conflicted as he says.
Well, John, let's talk more about Senator Hamlet a little bit in our last couple minutes. So he is someone who a lot of people were were really talking up in a major way because of the way he criticized President Trump. And now people are saying, well, maybe he's trying to protect a role as potentially be a lobbyist at some point, or also maybe he'd have to keep that 2020 presidential candidacy around. What is his legacy after 6 years in the Senate as someone who did he disappoint a lot of people? Did he disappoint people on both sides?
Yeah, I think he really disappointed people on both sides. So when you try to take that center position, it's a very difficult position to take in this country, especially at this time over the past few years. And yeah, he has made a lot of enemies on the right, and a lot of people on the left are saying, good, he's on our side. And then when it comes down to voting, usually we'll end up voting with President Trump. So a very murky legacy. And he started out, from my perspective, kind of more libertarian leaning perspective, started out as let's cut the budget and let's do something different here. And now it's just like we're here trying to figure out why does he vote this way and none of us really know, that kind of says it all. You need to argue a position and stand behind it if you want to have a legacy.
And David, what do you think about Flake at this point?
Well, he's mentioned he's wanted to run for president. I think, you know, a lot of U.S. senators like to run for president as the next step. And I think any U.S. senator that is going to vote to confirm Judge Kavanaugh is probably never going to be president. I think that's kind of, you know, because there is so much anger over that vote.
Yeah, let's talk in the last minute or so about what we think the legacy of this is. Are we ever going to get back to Supreme Court hearings? I recently watched the Ruth Bader Ginsburg documentary. She was approved 96-3, even though a bunch of Republican senators said, I disagree with what you're saying, but you're qualified. Are we to a point now where you mentioned earlier, David, that we're trying to have the Supreme Court be the sort of nonpartisan aspect of it? Is that day gone now?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, and even look at, you know, the last appointment that was made, there were some Democratic votes for confirming him, and it was a much, you know, you didn't see all of this contentiousness, even though it was President Trump's first appointment. And so, you know, I think this one really was, you know, people had some legitimate concerns about his background and so, but you're always going to have some contention, of course.
And John, briefly?
Yeah, I think it's very difficult to go back because then you're going to have a tit for tat. You had Reid pull the filibuster for certain nominees, then Mitch McConnell pulled it for all nominees, including the Supreme Court.
John Gabriel, editor-in-chief at Ricochet.com. David Lujan, director of the Arizona Center for Economic Progress. Guys, thanks for being here for the NewsCap.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday NewsCap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.